Good afternoon, everyone. So our previous speaker talked about the plants. I want to talk about the soil. And you know how it is. If you're a plant scientist, you tend to find things work really well in plants. If you're a soil scientist, things work really well in the soil. So I have a bit of a bias here. But anyways, not to say one is better than the other. In fact, they work very well together. But again, to acknowledge my co-authors here, again, this was a review that we had put together for potato production in eastern Canada. And so it's the work of us as well. As I'm going to be referring, or you'll be noticing other people who've been involved in this. So the basic problem we face all the time is, so I got this potato field. So how much nitrogen I put on this potato field this year? That's always the question we face because it varies. It varies from field to field and year to year. And that's really the question we're trying to answer. And I want to talk about it in the context of eastern Canada. So eastern Canada, we're looking at a rain-fed production. And a relatively humid environment with lots of leaching over the winter. And how do you make the decision of that optimal rate? Well, really, there's the supply of nitrogen that comes from the soil, and there's a crop demand, and there's the balance between those two. And that's really what's determining your optimal rate. But, of course, then there's also economic context that comes into that works with that. So what I'm going to do is focus really on the soil and supply, because if you're measuring something in the soil, that's all you can measure. You can't measure demand. Now, the challenge we face, of course, is this soil and supply is quite variable. Now, when I talk about supply, this is what we're measuring as a plant uptake in the whole plant, so vine plus tubers with no fertilizer applied. That's our way of doing an in-field assessment. And these are all different fields or different trials, and you can see lots of variability. Some of this we might anticipate, some we would not be able to predict. And that's the challenge that we face. It's fairly substantial variation. So I want to examine four different sort of strategies that you might take to try and deal with some of this variability. So the classic soil test is a spring nitrate test. This is one that's probably the most commonly used soil test anywhere for nitrogen. And if you look at the kind of data we have, so this is taken over different years, you can look at the plant uptake as a measure of soil and supply against the spring nitrate. It's not bad. You know, it's explaining a fair bit of the variability. There's some work that Joe Boulanger did looking at the economic optimum N rate as a function of soil nitrate. You know, maybe not all discriminations, maybe not quite what we'd like, but not bad. But there's a couple of real problems in using soil nitrate directly. The first of all is that we do lose all of our nitrate over the winter. So what you're measuring in the spring is not a residual. You're measuring what's mineralizing that spring. So you get a very small amount right at the start, and it increases very rapidly. So when you take the sample, it has a huge effect on how much you measure. So it makes it very difficult to use that as a meaningful test. The second thing is that although this is our usual situation, you can have lots of nitrate in the fall, it's all gone by spring, every now and then we get residual. And if you get residual and you've got a small amount in spring, this will really throw off your prediction. So these two considerations make it difficult to use this. So the next strategy are ion exchange membranes. So usually used for nitrate, sometimes for ammonium. They're placed in the soil in situ, and basically they're, you know, collecting the nitrate ammonium out of the soil. This is some work that out of Derek Lynch's group in Truro. This is work by Mehdi Sharifi. And this is where they're using the ion exchange membranes to look at N availability from some organic amendments in potato production. And the numbers at the bottom are the cumulative number of days that they're collecting the information over. And so it can be quite a good measure. It can sometimes take a while to get enough information to get a good prediction of it. The other thing that is a little challenging is it's actually measuring from a pretty small volume of soil. But there's been some good results. This is a trial Noura Ziadi. This is using the membranes where fertilizer rates have been applied. So it's not just the N supply, it's actually the total crop supply. Looking at relative yield against the nitrate on the membranes, and they had quite a nice response over multiple years. So it does look promising. So another strategy is, well, the nitrate's not going to work. Let's look at the mineralizable N, right? Because that's where most of the N's coming from, is through mineralization. So what we started doing is looking at the soil potentially mineralizable N, and we're doing that with a long-term incubation. And we're using that long-term incubation as sort of our standard. So we went and we got some soils from all over Canada, and we started looking at different indices, and some of them look pretty good. So here's a UV absorbance of this sodium bicarbonate extract. We're getting correlation of 0.74 with our N0. That looks pretty good. This is a direct distillation of the sodium hydroxide, the ISNT. Some look pretty good. The other thing that's interesting is the, you know, the total organic N is almost as good, despite all these other pools. But, you know, some look promising. This one in particular. So we got really excited about this. I thought, oh, wow, look at this. We got the sodium bicarbonate extract, and look at this nice predictor of N0. Isn't this cool? We got something here. Well, then we made the mistake of saying, well, instead of trying to predict N0, let's predict actual N supply. So then we take these same indices now and look them against the field-based estimate of N supply. Well, N0 actually is a really lousy predictor of N supply. So that didn't work out so good. I know, here's our nice sodium bicarbonate one, very low R. So some didn't look too bad. And guess who our best predictor was? Soil nitrate. So here is the soil nitrate that I kind of discounted earlier. Turns out to be it's our best predictor of N supply. So what do you do with that? Well, so we thought, well, the problem, again, comes back to things like the variability of trying to measure that in the spring. So what we did is, in doing the incubations, the first 2 weeks, normally you discount them in estimating your potentially mineralizable N because it's a flush. So we actually treated this as a separate pool. We called it pool one. It's a labile pool of mineralizable N. So what we've been doing is adding that to the mineral N, because our thinking is that, well, in the spring what's changing is you're basically going from the labile pool to the mineral N, so if you add them together, that should be a much more stable measure. And in fact, didn't look too bad. So here it is as a predictor. So again, you know, a bit of noise, but not bad. Not bad as a predictor. And this one we'd have a lot more comfort with rather than just doing a spring nitrate. So the last thing I want to talk about is using a simple kinetic model. So this is the classic first-order model that is used. It's the same model used with fitting the value of N0. So we have our N that's mineralized at time t over here. This is our soil potentially mineralizable N. And the K is our mineralization rate constant. Okay, so to apply this then, we change it just a little bit. So we're going to now add our soil mineral N that we're measuring at the start. We basically just add that to it. And we've added the labile pool to the N0 here as our mineralizable N. And we're doing it on a daily time step. And then this mineralization rate constant, you have to modify with moisture temperature. So it's kind of beyond today, but we have a new logistic temperature function, and we have a new biophysical water function that we use to modify the value of K for this prediction. And it's looking pretty good. So here is the field-measured soil N supply. And here is our predicted soil N supply. So again, this is the plant uptake, vines plus tubers in an unfertilized field. And so the dashed line is a 1-to-1. The solid line is the regression line. This is pretty good. Now, if you haven't worked with this kind of data, you might say, well, you know, it's still only 50% of the variability. But the other thing you have to remember, see, typically when you do this, you assume that your independent variable is accurate and you're trying to predict it. But the reality is, it's trying to measure the soil N supply in the field for the plant. It's actually quite variable. So I'm really proud of 50%. So now the problem with that model is, well, how do I apply it, right? Because I got to do a 24-week incubation. I mean, this is not going to go in a soil test lab. So what we're looking at now, and this is what we're doing, is looking at can we do a more practical application? So we need these different components. So we need the spring mineral N, the pool one. Well, we can measure those. That's all right. You need to have a value of K and of N0. So what we're doing is we've taken New Brunswick as an example. We've gone all across the province. We've taken samples through different soil types, different cropping systems, and we're going to run the incubations. And then, depending on how it looks, we either take an average value of the K, or we'll create categories with distinct values of K, and then you do what's called a fixed K. Basically, you just fix that value, and then you recalculate your N0, because typically the two vary together. Okay, so you fix your value of K, you recalculate, you get your N0. And then, again, I don't have time to show it today, but we have some preliminary data that shows that you should be able to predict N0 relatively well. So if you have a soil texture parameter, an organic matter parameter, and a climate index parameter, you can actually predict N0 reasonably well. So we need soil temperature. Well, we found a nice simple model predicted from air temperature. need soil water content. Again, we found quite a nice simple one, some basic soil properties plus precipitation. We can predict that. So we can get all these parameters. Of course, you can't predict the future in terms of climate. So the plan then is you go to a particular field, you measure these things, you predict these things, and then you go back, for example, let's say the past 30 years of climate data, and you run it through the 30 years of climate data and basically come up with like a probability distribution of the soil N supply, and you get an idea as to what's the range of N supply. So you can go to the grower and say, well, chances are your N supply is somewhere between here and here, average is likely here, and then based on that, they can decide what they want to do in terms of their management. So it's a good idea. We'll see if it pans out. I'm crossing my fingers. So what does it all mean? Well, it's still challenging. Soil N supply prediction is still challenging, and I don't think it's going to change in the near future. This pool 1 plus the soil mineral N, we call it the SNS test. It looks promising. We're still working on developing this into producing a practical tool, not just for potatoes, but basically any arable annual crop. The ion exchange membranes, there's been some good success with that. Really focusing now on using this kinetic model to see about predicting soil N supply. But the other thing I would emphasize, though, is that you don't really want to use this stuff in isolation. So again, if you go back to the start, it's about matching supply and demand. This is only about supply. So the ideal is you use your supply estimate to choose an at planting rate, and then you can use some of the measurements like our previous speaker, Joe Belanger, was saying about the plants to then refine your in-season management, and then when you put them together, then you've got good end management. Thank you very much. The difficulty you have here is in our rain-fed environment, your options for in-season management are much more limited. So you can do an at-planting application, you can do a granular application up to about the final hilling. Like you take something like, say, the nitrogen index with the 1 ton, I mean, by the time you get to hilling, you're getting pretty close to your limit as to whether or not you can use that test. The PDL nitrate testing at that point, it's too early. You can't get good data on it. We, in our particular area, we've had sort of mixed results with the SPAD. So really, you want to be pretty close in our environment at planting. You need to be relatively close. Our in-season management, really, a lot of it is foliar urea. And with the issues with leaf burning, like you can do it, right? But your options are limited. But now, if we irrigated, you're right. If you're irrigated, you can do that. You can go with a low at planting and you can manipulate it. Yeah.
Does ammonium add that much to your equation there? Do you need ammonium?
The only reason we leave the ammonium in is that when we were doing these trials, some of them were rotations that had some kind of manure in the system somewhere. And so, yeah. So, technically, really probably could do nitrate, but for simplicity, we left as a mineral N. Yeah. Yeah.
When you go above field capacity with something like 80-85%, when the soil medium become anaerobic, are you seeing too much of the ammonia bleeding, and that does it affect your mineralization rate?
Well, we will often get those wet periods, right? But we don't see any real change in terms of N supply, right? What we'll typically see is denitrification, and that can happen. I guess the other thing too is we don't have a lot of measurements of denitrification, unless they're really extreme. They're usually small enough that it's not a big factor.